This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Residents of Portland, Oregon reeled over the Memorial Day weekend after a stabbing incident on a train in which two people died. According to witnesses and local news reports, a white man named Joseph Christian harassed two women of color, one of whom was wearing a hijab. Three other white men intervened and were allegedly stabbed by Christian. Two out of the three died from their injuries, and the third survived after being treated at the hospital. The two victims were 23-year-old Taylison Merdin Namkai Meche and 53-year-old Ricky John Best. 21-year-old Micah David Cole Fletcher is the sole survivor of the attack, which is now being investigated by the FBI as a possible hate crime. While such incidents are hardly a new phenomenon in Donald Trump's America, they've become noticeably more commonplace. We go now to Portland, Oregon to speak with Darlene Huntress. She is the Associate Director of Unite Oregon, a group whose mission is to, quote, build a unified intercultural movement for justice. Welcome to the program, Darlene.
Thank you, Sonali. It's nice to be here.
So first, let's talk about what exactly is the context within which these stabbings took place. I mean, we think of Portland as this, you know, and the larger Portland area in Oregon as a liberal haven. But does Portland have an active network of white nationalist groups that this alleged stabber was a part of?
I think, first of all, the idea that Portland and Oregon are liberal havens is largely, it's something that's, it's a belief that's held by folks that don't actually live here. The reality is that Oregon isn't any different than any other state, and in fact, have Portland itself has a very deep history around racism. The state was founded in 1859 and was the only state in the country who had it written into the Constitution that if you were a person of color, you couldn't live here, you couldn't have a job here. And it wasn't until 1926 that Black people were even allowed to move to the state of Oregon. So I think while we may not have the obvious Confederate flags hanging in the streets, there has always been very deep-seated racism that is in the state. And so while we are heartbroken about what happened on Friday, I don't think that any of us who work in the movement around racial equity and are that surprised that kind of racism exists here. There are white nationalist groups in the state. I think if you look at the Southern Poverty Law Center website, you'll see that there are at least seven white nationalists and white supremacist groups here. There are radio stations that are devoted solely to moving that message. So it's a beautiful state, but I think it's just a myth that it's, while we may be progressive in some of our politics, we have a lot of work to do on the issue of race in the state and very much in this city.
In 2014, the federal government had a massive sweep in Oregon, the result of a years-long investigation into a criminal web in Oregon involving guns, drugs, stolen property, identity theft that linked white supremacists with outlaw motorcycle gangs. There were a number of cases that came out of that, all centered around Portland and the broader area. And this is something that, of course, far predates the Trump era. In the Trump era, however, are you seeing a big jump in hate crimes or incidents that appear to be hate crimes like we see in other parts of the country?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. I mean, I think that hate speech incites violence. And certainly there's been a really alarming uptick of hate incidences in the state since Election Day. We spent the better part of the first 2 months post-election really responding to a very nervous community that was also Yeah, there's definitely been an uptick in hate crimes here. I think the political climate has not helped the situation and has really made it considerably worse.
In fact,
there's no question.
There was a study by BuzzFeed and ProPublica earlier this year that found that Oregon led the country in having more hate and bias crimes than anyone in the United States, number one in the nation. I mean, you
yeah.
might have expected that distinction to go somewhere in the South, but Oregon, wow.
Yeah, I mean, and I think once you get outside of the more urban, it's a very rural state. And so, you know, again, I think that there have always been white militia in this state. They're just very active and engaged now. And I think feeling especially empowered, considering the kind of rhetoric that was being spewed both during the presidential campaign, but the sort of folks that very openly supported Donald Trump, the white militia, I just think it's empowered the movement here in a way that's, you know, just super dangerous for folks in our state.
And explain that sort of geography and socioeconomic situation of in Oregon. When I think of Oregon, I have to admit, I've never been to Oregon, but when I think of it, I just think of Portland. I think of, you know, TV shows that might be based in Portland, but you're right, Portland is a very small part of this bigger state, the majority of which is rural. So if you can give us a little bit more, a deeper understanding of that for a non-Oregon, I think that might help.
So I think, I think you just sort of framed it really well. We have, you know, in Multnomah County, which is the county which Portland resides in, it's primarily urban. Most of our population is centered in this part of the state. Once you get outside of Multnomah County, you really do get into much more very, very rural areas. I think as far as like demographics go, it's a very white state. It's starting to become much more diverse. I think that, you know, we're starting to see a thriving Latino population, and we're starting to become a more diverse state, but it's still very, very white. I mean, I think, you know, maybe 2 or 3% of the population is African American here. And so as soon as you get out of Portland, you're getting into farmland. You're getting into there's a lot of migrant workers here, logging. So there's a lot of it's a very big state and a very small population of folks spread out across it, but you know, many of whom live in Multnomah County. So while Portland is much more progressive in its politics, it doesn't really match a lot of the rest of the state.
And do you feel that the changing demographics have also heightened these sort of racial resentments as we see in other parts of the country?
I think that's probably a fair assessment. I mean, like I said, I think it's always been here, but it certainly seems like it's at least becoming more, people are becoming much more aware of it in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, I guess. So I'm not sure.
Let's talk about responses to the brutal stabbing that took place on Friday. How have elected officials and authorities responded in the Portland area? And are you either heartened by their response or feel like it could be stronger? And we're talking about the local response. We'll talk about the national or federal response later.
Sure. So the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, has been, you know, right in front of the camera, expressing his condolences to the family, talking about, he's been very, very vocal, I think. I do think, though, that the way that I see this is we have to go beyond the thoughts and prayer responses, and really what we want to hear from our local electeds and as well as our federal one is, what are we going to do to stop this? I mean, I think this was a preventable crime. This person is not unknown to law enforcement. 2 days prior to the stabbing, he was on the same train harassing an African-American woman then. And what we don't understand is, you know, why wasn't something done? Why wasn't he taken off that train and told he couldn't come back? I really believe that if this had been a Black person on that train raising his fist and talking about Black power, the response by law enforcement would have been very, very different. And so what we want to hear from, you know, what we'd like to hear from our elected officials is how are we going to make our community safer in these moments, and what can we do? You know, you should be able to ride the train without being harassed, and certainly without having such a violent incident happen that we think could have been prevented.
And this person, Joseph Christian, who has now had multiple charges against him, he has been photographed at white nationalist rallies.
That's
there are
right.
pictures of him giving the Heil Hitler sign, Nazi salutes, and he's definitely somebody who was known to authorities. I want to actually play a video of one of the women who was the original target, verbal targets of this man, and the victims of the stabbing came to the, you know, tried to intervene when Joseph Christian was apparently harassing them. This is what this one young woman had to say.
I just want to say thank you to the people who put their life on the line for me, because they didn't even know me. And they lost their lives because of me and my friend and the way we looked. And I just want to say thank you to them and their family, and that I appreciate them. Because without them, we probably would be dead right now.
A very tearful young woman who has spoken to the media, thanking these two men for intervening. Darlene, I have to say that, you know, as a person of color, I have experienced verbal abuses in the past, in the most mundane of situations, and people around me have not intervened. The three men who intervened, two of whom were killed, that they spoke out cost them their lives. How do you, as somebody who works, you know, for justice, social justice, how do you view these men?
I think they're heroes, but I think when you look at that moment, you see the most grotesque part of humanity, and also one of the most beautiful parts of humanity, to have the courage to stand up for your convictions and to defend someone, to see an injustice and to try to do something to stop it from happening. You know, the way that when I think about what happened on Friday, I can imagine many of my friends being either the young women who were being harassed or the men who stepped in to try to intervene. You know, it's hard not to call them heroic, certainly courageous in a way that, you know, it speaks volumes to me that in a moment when you're really just trying to stand up to an injustice, you lose your life for it. It just really speaks volumes about the way the world is right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to find, honestly, I'm having a hard time articulating it. It's hard to find the words. And I do want to say, you know, we do appreciate the fact that our mayor is a friend of ours, and we appreciate his leadership in this moment. And I think, you know, I think he's trying to give our community space to heal, which I think we need, but we also need real leadership moving forward to figure out how to make these communities safer. You know, that to us, I feel like there's sort of like three things that we keep thinking about. We have to have a real discussion about safety for these impacted community members. We need to be ready to stand up to hate speech long before it escalates to a moment of violence like we saw on Friday. And we need to learn how to deal with our history here in Oregon and what that means in today's world.
The two out of the three men attacked were very young, in their early 20s. The third man was a 53-year-old Army veteran, Ricky Best, 23-year-old Taylorson Merdin Namkaimeche was a graduate of Reed College. And in fact, his mother wrote an open letter to Donald Trump over the weekend on Memorial Day, asking him to condemn the violence. She said, "You have said you will be president for all Americans, so I ask you, Mr. President, to take action at this time. Your words and actions are meaningful here in America and throughout the world. After several days of silence, Trump finally broke the silence. And of course, in his signature style, he tweeted a very straightforward response. What do you make of what Trump said in response to this these stabbings? He basically said they were unacceptable. That was the one word he said. The victims were standing up to hate and intolerance. Our prayers are with them. He said the attacks are intolerable. Two lines. The person who many credit with having unleashed greater forces of hatred took a few days and then said two sentences.
Our response to President Trump is that a tweet isn't enough, certainly not 3 days after the incident. But I think we have to not worry about a president that we know is never going to lead on issues of race. And we just have to be proactive and lead ourselves. I think we were disappointed, but not surprised by President Trump's response.
And how have people the people of Portland and surrounding areas in Oregon as a whole, how have they responded? We've seen amazing photos of the vigils and the candles and the messages. And of course, around the country, a lot of people have expressed solidarity.
Well, I think it's one of those moments where, you know, we're taught to stand up to an injustice when we see it. There was clearly that was happening on that train, and two and three men stood up and tried to do something about it and paid the ultimate price for it. So I feel like it's a story that, you know, it has touched us all for different reasons, whether you're a member of the Muslim community, whether you're a person of color or a white ally, we can all feel in our hearts the impact of something like this happening. I think in general, folks are engaged, are angry, are sad, want to do whatever they can to address this. I think it's terrible that it had to be such a horrifying incident to wake some folks up. But I think we've seen that happen before with the presidential election, how folks sort of woke up after Trump was elected president. But I think in general, Oregonians are really heartbroken about this, no matter what community they're from. It's a really hard time for us right now. It's really tough.
Finally, Darlene, tell us about the work of Unite Oregon and how you are organizing against the Trump agenda, against white nationalism in your home. What is your goal to see justice in your community?
Sure. We work across the state. We have offices in three parts of the state. We work on issues of racial equity. We work on immigration issues. We try to bridge the rural and urban divide that is so much a part of the state. So we have offices in rural parts of the state. We have an office in the most populated city in the state. We work on public policy that we hope impacts communities of color, immigrants and refugees, and helps remove some of the many barriers that they face just in their day-to-day lives. The best way to address white nationalism and Donald Trump is to get up every day, put your boots on, and work to empower those community members to rise up. And that's what we do every day through leadership development, through policy advocacy, and through grassroots community organizing, where the impact of community members are the ones whose voices are in the front and center and really helping us to move these issues in the state.
Can you give out a website for your organization?
Sure, it's uniteoregon.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Darlene, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you in the work you do.
Thank you so much, Sonali, for everything you're doing as well. It's great to talk to you.
Same here. My guest is Darlene Huntress, Associate Director of Unite Oregon, a group whose mission is to build a unified intercultural movement for justice. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.